The only other thing that I found out from a trip to Reading not that long ago was that non-Chinese employees can't own anything.
Right.
That ownership thing is restricted to Chinese.
So even
employees.
I
didn't know that before.
Even if you're quite far up the food chain,
if you're not Chinese, you're not a part
Damn.
Of that.
Can you imagine if? Can you imagine if you flip that on its head? Hello and welcome to another telecoms.com podcast. We have Ian back, but we don't have Jamie this week, so we've got super sub Wei.
Hello.
Hi, Wei. It's been a while. Good to have you back on the pod.
Yeah, great.
Now, what are we going to talk about? We're going to talk about, we keep trying to avoid it, but pretty much every story that most people have read that we've written in the last week or two, it's been almost a couple of weeks since we put a pod up, has been about Huawei, so there's no escaping it. Then we're going to talk about the Qualcomm Apple 5G litigation coming to a head and what the implications of that are. And then we're going to finish off with some more general 5G chat. So, Pierre just pointed at me accusingly. So if you're watching this on the site or on Facebook or on YouTube, you can listen to it on SoundCloud or iTunes or countless other podcasting platforms and vice versa.
Also, this is our last podcast here.
Oh yeah, that's true. We're also moving office. So
it's a
if for some reason you've grown a fondness for this sort of crappy background.
These strange things yes. that look like they're for people who are
the precious things are going to go away. And next time will be either from a studio in our new place, or if they haven't sorted that out, it might be in a pub or something like that. That'd be a laugh, wouldn't it? A bit of outside broadcasting. So there we are. Bye-bye, studio. You've served us well. Okay. So, yes, Huawei. The main Huawei story is actually from about a week ago, but it's worth recapping on. Wei, you did a great job. You dug up a study by a couple of academic dudes, and they were looking into who owns Huawei. And just before I hand it over to you, the reason we care who owns Huawei is at the absolute core of all the discussion about whether or not Huawei can be trusted to get involved in 5G networks and that sort of thing, is a presumed relationship between the company, which is private, and the Chinese state, which Huawei always refute. And so who owns the company outright, given that these records are not public, is at the core of it. So over to you. Tell us a little bit about this study.
Yeah, it was quite interesting the way that it came to me. It was not really me going to dig it out. It was just pushed to me by Twitter.
Oh, don't give away the state secrets.
No, sorry.
What you meant was, months of exhaustive research.
Exactly. I've been probably looking for things related to Huawei on...
Well, and your various inside informants
exactly.
and sources.
Digging around, putting his life at risk.
That's right.
Good, I'm pleased we clarified that.
I've been digging very deep. And found that it was actually a paper done by two scholars, one economist and the other is a legal professor. As you remember, one of them actually responded to us.
Yeah.
They said they didn't really do anything original. They just combed the existing publicly available materials from different media, so both Chinese and overseas, and which is true because they all use the existing materials. But they were probably the first one who put the materials into a coherent, we call it story or a narrative to make sense. To make sense, and the materials sort of could talk to each other, so they're not contradicting. So they started with clarifying the name. So when we say Huawei, it is actually an overarching brand, covering meaning different things. So the company that we most often...
No relation to your name, I presume?
Not really, no.
Okay.
No.
Just thought I'd check.
Well, yeah.
We might have uncovered the secret of the ownership of Huawei, right?
Yeah, the Chinese or look the same or sound the same. Anyway.
I, of course, wasn't suggesting that for one second.
No. actually, when we most often associate Huawei with is the Huawei technology. I think it's called Huawei Technology Limited or Co. Limited. So it's the company who makes the products and who delivers the services. But this company is actually 100% owned by an investment holding company, which is owned by two parties. One is the owner, who owns the founder, who owns slightly more than 1%.
Yes. How do you pronounce his name properly?
Zhen Zhengfei.
So it's totally wrong.
No, not entirely.
Wei's in the room, I'm not even going to bother trying to pronounce Chinese stuff.
You're almost there.
Well, it looks like Ren, doesn't it? It's R-E-N.
It does look like Ren.
But how do you pronounce that in Chinese?
Zhen.
Zhen. There we go.
Okay. Anyway, he owns slightly more than 1%, and the rest of close to 99% is owned by the trade union of the Huawei Holding Company Trade Union Committee.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone just abbreviated into the trade union. Then it comes down to who is there in the trade union. Then on the public documentation, for example, in Huawei's annual report, it says there are about 90,000 employees who owns Huawei's share, and they vote the members to the committee, who then vote the board of directors and board of supervisors.
And those are the people, that board are ultimately the decision making board for the company.
They will be, yes. Yeah. And they will appoint the rotating CEOs and stuff like that, or rotating chairman. But the key point that the scholars were disputing was the nature of the so-called shareholding.
Yeah.
Because by shareholding, it would mean that they own part of the company, but they found that it's not actually the case. The shares that they've been granted are pretty much, as we are more familiar with, is like the stock options that the public companies sort of incentivize their employees with. So they are not transferable, and when you leave the company will buy back your share at a predefined price. And what you're entitled to is the incentives. So certain monetary incentive associated with the share.
Do we know? Sorry, Tobin. Do we know? Because I don't remember this coming up when we published your piece or in subsequent discussion. Whether if the company's owned by its employees, do all profits get redistributed back to employees?
In a sort of theoretical sense. For example, the three of us own a company, 30-30-40, for example. Then after,
as long as I get the most.
Yeah, because you sit in the middle.
I'm the biggest.
Yeah. After we decide that we'll take our certain percentage of our profit to reinvest in the company, then the rest will be distributed between the shareholders.
Should be, shouldn't
according it? According to the shares we own. So that is one of the basic problems with Huawei's own their way of defining share owning of the company. Is that they say that the 90,000 or so employees who own the company, they will vote to decide who should sit on the committee and then who should decide who should sit on the board. But then there are problems with this definition on one hand. So if these 90,000 or so employees vote as shareholders, then their vote should be weighted.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, in my hypothetical case, you will have 40% of the vote.
Yeah.
If someone abstain, then your vote will outweigh my vote because you own more shares.
Yeah.
But that doesn't look to be the case in the Huawei case. So each shareholding employee seems to have one vote. In that sense, does it mean that those 90,000 also employees vote as employees?
Yeah.
If that's the case, then that means that the employees will have the chance to vote their management, their senior management who run the company. Then why only limited to those 90,000? Why now the 18,000? 180,000.
Oh, so you're saying only half of employees, all of whom are supposedly shareholders to some extent, yeah, actually get a vote in this?
That's right. That's what
I thought is, because I didn't know that we defined it as 90, because when I was editing it, it seemed, the number seemed undefined, and I was thinking it could be even less than that, because they talk about voting shareholders.
Yes.
But are you saying they specifically put the number of 90,000 on it?
That's what they, that's what,
okay,
said. They,
right,
said. So the 90,000 who owns the share,
right,
will get the chance to vote.
It's about half of the total number of,
yeah,
employees.
So, but yeah, if it's down to the employees to vote the committee, then why not all,
yeah,
the employees?
And how do we know who those 90,000 are, and how do we know what the incentives those 90,000 have to vote?
Yeah, I mean, some people must have more shares than others, nominal shares or virtual shares, as they,
yeah,
call it,
in terms of voting weight.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it doesn't seem that the vote is being weighted according to the shares. So that's one part of the problem. Another part of the problem is the scholars were sort of detecting a conundrum that the Huawei has found itself in. Because on one hand, if it is really a trade union that owns 99% of the share of the holding company, who owns 100% of the big Huawei,
yep,
technology company, then probably it will come down to the nature of trade unions in China.
Mm-hmm.
In China, all trade unions are sort of owned, not owned, what about controlled
part
by
of
the state.
Yeah,
so
well,
it's all part of the public.
It's important
public,
not to forget that it's,
yeah,
it's nominally a communist country.
It is, and the
albeit with
the
Chinese characteristics, that's what they like to
say,
right, don't
they? Yeah. The trade unions, the trade union leadership are not really sort of selected by the employees. It's either appointed by the company's sort of leadership, which normally is the party leadership who has the ultimate decision making in a state-owned company, for example, or is appointed by the trade unions, the upper level trade unions, and it could go all the way up to the central,
yeah,
or China trade union, and the head of that trade union sits on the Politburo.
Yeah.
So that is one side of the story. So if it's really owned by the trade union, then it's you could call it state-owned or at least state-controlled. On the other hand, if it's not owned by the employees, as they call it, then Huawei basically has not been telling the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's been telling the world that it's an employee-owned company. If
wouldn't
that's not
be super rich, some of them.
Some of them.
Someone's coining it. We'll get onto their.
Rich.
They just announced some quarterly numbers. Someone's
we'll
doing nicely.
Yeah.
Like, unless they reinvest everything.
So Ian.
Sorry.
I'll let me finish.
No. Yeah. Then Huawei might have been hiding something. Then the scholars are,
yeah,
throwing the ball back to Huawei. So now it's up to you to explain to the world.
And we can get onto that because they responded.
Yeah.
But before I do.
Yeah.
Ian, as someone who, to the best of my knowledge, wasn't covering this, from what you've heard so far, does that clarify the situation at all or not?
No, I mean, the ownership thing's always been a bit hazy,
yeah,
isn't it? I mean, we know that the founder owns 1.14 or whatever,
yeah,
it is,
yeah,
or 1.14
or so they say,
something, and then
so
the rest
so
of it's, they just say the rest of it's owned by employees. The only
yeah,
other thing that I found out from a trip to Reading not that long ago was that non-Chinese employees can't own anything.
Right.
That ownership thing is restricted to Chinese.
So even
employees.
If you're, or even if you're,
and
like,
I didn't know that before.
I didn't know that.
God, even if you're quite far up the food chain.
If you're not Chinese, you're not a part,
damn,
of that.
Can you imagine if? Can you imagine
and,
if you flip that on its head?
And well, they were asked there because it sort of got revealed at this press event, and the people that were at the press event on the Huawei side were asked if that was likely to change because it could help to sort of improve the image, because it's a bit sort of.
So even
I don't know
if
what the word
you're
is,
your
but
senior
it's,
executives, you
yeah,
can't.
It's very discriminatory,
yeah,
isn't it? I mean,
just
it's
a bit.
The thing you get away with in other parts of the world.
No,
and
like I was just inferring, if you did it the other way around,
yeah, you'd be yeah.
If it was
so,
a Western company,
but they don't see it changing. They don't see
no.
that changing. So and that
if
would obviously exclude a lot of people. Yeah, but that would probably.
Can you be? Yeah, well, we should have asked that.
You probably, it's probably pretty difficult.
Can
to
you be non-ethnically Chinese?
Speak Chinese pretty well. It's like you have to go through a citizenship test and show that you can speak fluent
it's
Chinese.
It's probably the hardest citizenship to get in the world.
Is that
if you're a Caucasian guy who's lived there for 10 years,
you might be able to. Yeah, yeah.
Have a wife. I don't know. Chinese kids.
I wonder if it's ever happened.
Do you get, where you've obviously spent a lot more time in China than I have? Do you get a lot of sort of immigrants, people from other apparent ethnicities, nationalities, walking around in China, or does it tend to be sort of 99% Chinese people?
You mean people? You mean residents?
Yeah,
just people who live there. Yeah, there are plenty of people from other parts of the world.
So there probably are quite a few sort of immigrants that get some degree of citizenship.
No, it's very, very difficult. Yeah.
So they're in a sort of immigration limbo. They're sort of allowed to stay, but they don't have full citizenship.
Some sort of work
visa
or something, don't they?
You have legal residence status, but you don't get the citizenship.
Yeah, that's all I meant.
Yeah, it's like EU citizens in the UK. There's probably some system for...
We'll soon get rid of them, don't you worry.
People from Asian countries in China.
Yeah.
I'm only joking. I'm not really that xenophobic.
You have to use that bit in the intro.
Yeah.
Yes. Scott shows his true colours and goes on Brexit xenophobic rant.
I just find it hard to believe that the founder only owns 1%.
Mm.
Yeah.
What kind of founder is left with 1%?
But he's got the veto rate. The veto right.
I'm talking about money though. Yeah. I don't care about
that. No, I mean.
So you're saying even if he only owns 1% of the equity, which
he's got
power far in excess of that.
Yeah.
Sure, but
that's all.
What's his salary?
That's all fair
cash,
enough.
Yeah.
What's his salary?
You could define in the company's constitution that however much he owns, he's got the veto right. I see no problem there.
He's quite a strange figure though, because I mean, for years he was always sort of cited as the founder of Huawei. Mm-hmm. And you never saw anything of him.
Very secretive.
And they have this rotating chairman, rotating CEO system.
And now they suddenly wheeled him out.
And now it turns out that they're not really rotating CEOs at all. They're just kind of people who are sort of in a senior position. And he's basically the man in charge of the whole thing. Yeah, I mean, I actually one time thought maybe he was not alive anymore.
So a few years ago, he would show up in one Congress for like an hour. He would land in Spain, go to the pavilion.
There'd be lots of
swarm around.
Yeah, I bet you.
To like, look, this is that.
It's the main man.
And then he would just leave.
Hmm.
That's why I was like, oh, did he fly in private jet? Like, how rich is this guy?
And then since the start of this year, you can't get him off the telly, can you?
No.
Maybe he's an actor.
So after Wei wrote his piece, Huawei got in touch with us with a statement not on Wei's piece specifically, but on the report that you were writing about. Mm. I won't read out the whole thing, but basically they started off by saying, yeah, it's all bullshit. that's not a precise quote, by the way. But, you know, in sort of PR terms, they said all that. But then they said, Huawei is a private company wholly owned by its employees. No government agency or outside organization holds shares in Huawei or has any control over Huawei. Which is fine. I don't think their report was necessarily contradicting that. There was certainly no direct allegation that I could tell in the report of government ownership. It was certainly inferred. You know, it was left hanging out there. Well, if we can't explain who owns it, then maybe the government does.
Then there should be a handful of Huawei billionaires then.
I think that their report was basically saying it's
Well, there's certainly a few people not short of a bob.
Where are the academics from? Sorry.
Western.
One is from, I think it's George Washington University's law school, so that's in DC. That's the law professor, and then the economics professor is from university in Vietnam.
Oh, okay.
But he's American and he's been contributing to the Bloombergs and the stuff. So he's an old China hand. He actually worked in Shenzhen for quite a few years, so I believe both.
So he knows his stuff.
Yeah, I believe both of them are fluent in Chinese, so they read the Chinese publications. And
I mean, another question. I'm not inferring one way or the other, but when a report like this comes out from Western academics that happens to be incredibly useful to their host government. You then also think, well, you know, I wonder if they were prodded in that direction. But like I said, that's just suspicion you could have. I don't have any inside knowledge one way or the other. I mean, when I wrote up their response, which you can see on the site, I'm not going to bore you by reading out the whole thing. I sort of concluded that, you know, Huawei's done its best to try and clarify the situation, but, you know, the problem is transparency.
Yeah.
Problem is no one knows. As long as it's a private company hosted in a quite opaquely run country, there are still going to be loads of questions about who owns it, who makes decisions, what the lines of accountability are, all that sort of thing. And I've said it loads of times on the podcast before, and I still think I have some sympathy for Huawei on this, because if, let's say, we assume they are completely innocent and they've never so much as had a cup of tea with a member of the Communist Party,
yeah,
they still seem to be powerless to prove it. But the one way they could prove it, I suppose, or get closer to proving it, is to behave more like a Western public company.
Yeah.
And have accounts and you know, have everyone knows who all the shareholding is and all that sort of thing. If they did all that and everyone was still going, yeah, but I bet you're still chatting to the Communist Party, then they could go, well, what can I say? You know, I could say that I bet Ericsson's chatting to the Swedish Secret Service or Nokia's chatting to the Finnish Secret Service. Anyone can allege that.
Wasn't there another report I saw at the weekend in the Times? It was actually front page in the Times about Huawei's links to Chinese military about
was
funding.
That the CIA thing?
The CIA has sort of alleged they've received funding from the state,
yeah,
and they can sort of directly show that funding's come straight.
Yeah,
from
although
the state,
which, as far as I can tell, I mean, Jamie wrote that, and funnily enough, he's been out there hanging out with Huawei, so it'd be interesting when he next gets on the pod to see if he had any other little chats, as much as he can reveal.
Yeah,
but when I edited that, it seemed to me. Again, there wasn't anything concrete. It was a CIA saying, we've got loads of evidence, but not presenting the evidence.
Yeah.
Is that how you understood it?
I read it whether the CIA might share it with the very senior sort of security officials in this country.
Right, but not public.
Broadly. No.
Yeah, so we've just got their word for it.
That's probably
not
the reason why Huawei has
by it, but
Huawei has not been indicted for sort of breaching security, because if they had been, then the CIA's and the FBI's would need to show the court
the
evidence. They absolutely don't want to let others know what they know, so that's probably they just hold back. So Huawei
it's
are
a
only
bit of a standoff in that way, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, if I know some secret but I don't want to present it in the court, then I would not sue you for that.
Yeah,
because I don't want you to know how much I've known.
Yeah.
So.
But then that's why Huawei's seeing the U.S. government's the main reason is to try and, in the discovery, make them present their evidence.
Well, they don't. Yeah, I mean, they just don't want to let people. This not the way the CIA works, is it? Is to sort of say this is how we got hold of information
and
like
yet,
this, because they reveal where their spies have been hanging out and
that's
who they
are. Yeah.
And yet they got no problem leaking stuff to the Times, though, have they? So
no, they'll leak it, but they won't. Won't sort of go into the details.
Yeah, they're not going to go. They're not
going to
go.
Operations.
Dave the spy was hiding under the desk in this office.
The bloke who works in the.
He's an absolute diamond spy.
But despite all of this, it hasn't stopped the government from, because there's loads of reports today, aren't there, this week about.
Yeah, well, actually, I'll comment on that. But just a little segue from me saying, if they were more transparent in a sort of Western public company way, that might help. Huawei is increasingly becoming a little bit more transparent about its numbers. I suspect the main reason it's doing it is to go, ha, we're still raking in tons of cash in spite of all the aggro you're chucking at us. But, you know, I wrote that up late yesterday. They got a 39% year-on-year increase in revenues from Q1 last year.
Did they break that down at all?
In terms of business units?
The annual report that came out not that long ago either was quite an impressive rate of growth, but it was pretty much all driven by the consumer and enterprise.
Smartphones
mainly, but also some good stuff on the enterprise side.
Right.
Whereas the carrier business was down a couple of percent.
They didn't. So. It was very top line.
And they talked recently, I think, with the event that Jamie's been at, about how their carrier business this year is going to be double digit percentage growth, so it's going to sort of rebound after this.
Which seems plausible, but I think all their competitors are probably expecting that as well, aren't they?
Well, Ericsson's results were very good.
Yeah,
it came out a week ago or whatever in terms of the sales performance. I think they were up sort of 10% or 7% organically. So,
but yeah, so what they announced was this 39% year-on-year, and you know, we were just chatting before we started recording that you weren't aware that they'd been announcing quarterly numbers before. So it could be that they didn't even announce quarterlies a year ago.
I don't think they did.
In which case, we only have their word for it that they got a 39% increase.
Yeah.
But they also talk that they've shipped what, how many millions of phones? So that
that was 59 million, I think.
Yeah, that was very impressive.
Which again suggests it's driven by consumer rather than carrier.
So I think last year was the first year where the consumer business overtook their system business.
Yeah.
Mm. So
They're almost. I mean, it's not quite 50% of the overall revenues, I think, but it's the biggest unit now, and they're almost mainly.
I think it was more than 50% of revenue. Yeah, but just the profit.
It's round about that anyway.
Can I say one little thing about their smartphone numbers? It's directly relevant to the company Wei and I both used to work for. So we both used to work for Strategy Analytics, and I used to track smartphone numbers. I hope I'm not giving away too much, but basically we used to get some numbers off Huawei just directly from them, and we quite often adjust them.
Right.
Because we figured they were
a bit on the bullish side.
Yeah. But that was, I don't think they were announcing them publicly then.
Right.
So that was more us just being analysts and making phone calls and chatting to people.
Yeah.
When it's public, I don't, you know, again, it's hard to know. I mean, this comes back to basically the central problem is just trusting any of the numbers when there isn't transparency.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone can deny, as Pierre's just said, there's a ton of Huawei phones kicking about. So it's not like they're just making it up. But you do sometimes wonder whether there's a degree of embellishment. But anyway, yeah, they're doing really well. They've got about 40 deal wins on 5G compared to 18 for Ericsson. The margin's about 8%.
Well, Ericsson's are named. That's the
thing. There's another
Ericsson
thing.
Ericsson insists that. So, and then if you ask them, well, does that mean you've got more than that you haven't named? They sort of evade.
Yeah, they sort of give you they arch their eyebrow.
Yeah. And then Nokia's talking about, what, 30 is it or something? The thing I'm never really clear with Nokia is it seems to consider anything to be 5G. So if it does a bit of optical gear, he goes, well, it's for a 5G project. So
yeah, but that must be where EE gets that idea from.
You know, what's 5G and what isn't?
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Okay, and
I bet Huawei's doing that as well.
One thing to point out from the Q1 total revenue number it gave in yuan. So yuan, is it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Or renminbi, what's the...
Yeah, no, I think it's the difference between pounds and sterling. I think it's basically the same thing.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Exactly, yeah.
I did a quick sort of Google calculation, turning that into dollars. And basically, they're bringing in more than 5 times more revenue than Ericsson.
Yeah.
No, they got the phones, but then Ericsson used to have phones and they bailed out of it.
Yeah.
So long and short of it is it's a 5 times bigger company than Ericsson right now, which is interesting.
Yeah. With the phones and the enterprise, though, whereas Ericsson's just pretty much all
carrier.
Also Ericsson's just mobile, whereas Huawei does loads of fixed stuff.
Even if you take out the phones, they will still be more than twice as big as Ericsson.
Yeah,
They're an end-to-end. This is what Nokia always says as well, isn't it? We're end-to-end. They sell optical gear. They sell all this stuff that Ericsson's not involved in.
So. I'm not saying it necessarily says bad things about Ericsson that they are that much bigger. It's just occasionally interesting to take stock.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the mobile business is that much bigger than Ericsson's.
Right, no, I'm sure you're right.
In fact, there was a Goldman Sachs story recently which said that they thought Ericsson had a slightly bigger share at the moment on the mobile side.
No, fair enough.
Which is odd because I've always seen figures saying that Huawei's always the market leader.
And you've got people like Dell'Oro trying to keep an eye on that sort of thing.
Huawei, I think, is still the biggest on
not by tons.
Not by
loads. They're not loads bigger.
Not loads, no.
No.
No, it's like, so if you look at the market shares between Nokia, Ericsson and Huawei, it's a fairly even split. It's like a couple of percentage points on RAN, say.
But. Okay, and I'm going to quickly wrap that up because we've been doing about half an hour on this and we've got other stuff to talk about. Today, where you just wrote up that apparently the UK, you know, having had all this pressure from the Yanks to just get rid of Huawei entirely, the latest word on the street is the UK might let them get involved in a fair bit of the 5G network.
Yeah, to build a so-called non-core part of the 5G networks, but that was only reported by the Telegraph. And they looked to be the only source, although the government spokesman did reply to Reuters, and they said, we're not being specific, it's just that we're doing...
We're still checking it out.
Evidence-based review of all the equipment.
What does
equipment.
That even mean, evidence-based review, as opposed to just guessing?
Yeah.
But I just feel any review should be evidence-based.
I mean, it's imminent anyway, isn't it, that report?
It did say that the results will be announced shortly. Yeah.
So, UK press has been quite good for Huawei-related leaks, hasn't it, at the moment? So give it that. Yeah. Okay, cool. Okay, what else has been going on? So you covered this, but I think I'm just going to lead with it.
Yeah, you lead it.
About it for a bit. The Qualcomm Apple litigation that's been going on for about a couple of years finally came to an end, and it resulted in Apple basically paying Qualcomm a sum of money and also entering into a 6-year license agreement. Now, a bit of background for this. This might be a bit of a monologue, guys, so bear with me, but interrupt whenever you want. A bit of background. Apple basically got the arsehole with Qualcomm for how much it's charging for its modems. Okay, and that's not the first. Nokia, it might have even been happening when you worked there, but Nokia got into a big lawsuit with Qualcomm about 15 years ago over similar stuff.
Yeah, this company's always one was suing the other and counter-suing and stuff like that.
Exactly, but it's, Nokia, I don't think it's coincidence well, that dominant handset manufacturers tend to tend to sort of get the arsehole with Qualcomm sooner or later. True. And that's because they're in such a strong position when it comes especially to modems, but for a while even things like sort of application processors and that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's what Qualcomm was arguing against, is that we're not only selling you modems, we're selling you SoCs.
But it basically from the start it just looked like Apple using litigation as a form of negotiation. It thought it was paying Qualcomm too much. Qualcomm didn't. They couldn't agree. So they went to the court. And then we got all sorts of collateral damage. Apple kept grassing Qualcomm up to various regulators and Qualcomm got in trouble. Qualcomm, I think, alleged that Apple might have been passing industrial secrets to Intel, which I'll come on to, that they were supposed to be its new modem partner, and all that sort of thing. And it all got nasty. And then towards the end of last year, now talking about Intel, Apple went, okay, that's fine. Up yours, Qualcomm, we're gonna go with Intel instead. Intel's bought loads of modem companies in the past, including Infineon. They're obviously a massive semiconductor company. They're like, we'll go with them, see you later. And I'm always skeptical. I've been covering Intel's attempts to get into the mobile space way back since it first tried to get into application processors. Without going too far into the weeds on that, but the x86 system versus the ARM system is much less energy efficient, so it's much less suited to tiny confined spaces. It's great for data centers and PCs and anywhere where you've got a fan, but on stuff like this, it was always going to struggle against ARM, and so it did. So it bailed on that one, but it thought, it's all right, we'll get it right with modems. And I was just skeptical, just because I just wasn't buying it. And then lo and behold, when Apple made its announcement of its truce with Qualcomm, the very same moment, Intel sent out a press release going, do you know what? We can't do 5G. We're calling it a day. In fact, we're out. I think they pretty much said we're out of modems, full stop.
Yeah, almost. Well, they said they will continue to support the 4G that they've committed, but no 5G, including the one that originally was scheduled to be launched in 2020, which we believe...
Which they kept going on about how great it was going to be.
Yeah, we'll be powering the iPhone, but
I tell you, you got to look back. I'm accusing them of lying. I presume they meant it when they said it, but if you look back at the communications from Intel about their 5G stuff over the last year, for them to just suddenly pull the plug on it, you really have to wonder how sincere those communications were at the time. Yeah. But that's, we're used to that as journalists. That's part of our job, is to sort of sift through this sort of FUD and this euphemizing and general misleading at times and marketing speak. So now the interesting thing about all this, I think, is what the nature of the settlement will have been.
Yeah.
Because they haven't gone public with it. We might hear a little bit more when Qualcomm does its next quarterlies. But The lump sum that Apple had to shell out was pretty much already set in stone, because Apple had been withholding a bunch of stuff it was already committed to paying Qualcomm as part of this dispute. So it was always going to have to pay that money sooner or later, probably.
Yeah.
But the licensing, so if it's licensed, it's clearly going back with Qualcomm for its modems, including for 5G, which we'll probably see the first Apple 5G phone in 2020, most people reckon. Mm. So the question for me is how much it has had to pay Qualcomm for the privilege. Now, I find it easy to believe that Apple found itself in an incredibly weak negotiating position thanks to Intel sucking at 5G.
Yeah.
And so Qualcomm could have absolutely rinsed them. Mm. Now, they probably will have been a little bit delicate about it, because, ultimately, there's massive financial benefit for Qualcomm in settling this. And as we saw, Pierre, what was it, the share price of Qualcomm?
It was just like high 50s and now it's like $86.
Right, so
up 60%.
60%.
Yeah.
I mean, it spiked about 20-30% as soon as the announcement. Yeah. It's kept going up after that.
About 23-24% shortly after the announcement came out. And shortly after that, Qualcomm updated the market. Well, it reported to FCC that... SEC. That they are expecting $2 EPS incremental. So that's tremendous.
Yeah, because what was their last earnings per share? Last quarter, it was like 79 cents or something, isn't it?
Yeah, less than $1. That was it was made on a revenue of less than $5 billion revenue. So
if we take that literally, that's talking about a tripling of profit on the back.
That's
of
what doubling at least. So that's what got me to say it's probably in the $10 billion range settlement.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a very crude calculation, but
we're all just doing back of a fag packet calculations on this.
Evidence based.
There we go. Yeah. The evidence being this bit of paper I've just been scribbling on. I've just got a feeling that this is a total win for Qualcomm, and I'm not even sure that's necessarily for the best, because Qualcomm is in quite a dominant position when it comes to 5G modem technology.
It is. I mean, when after Intel pulled out, Huawei is probably the only other one who has done its own modem. But
there's MediaTek, they'll be in there somewhere. But
not yet. Yeah. That's why I say. I mean, the possibility that Apple using Huawei's modem is pretty slim. So they had to come back to Qualcomm.
And we don't know how good Huawei's 5G modem is either.
Yeah, we don't. No.
I mean, Intel probably could have chucked out some kind of 5G modem. The question was whether it would be any good.
Well, Apple, seems like Apple thought no.
Yes, quite. Yeah, and so did Intel.
I mean, the implications are that they're going to end up having to bring out a 5G phone even later than they are doing. Mm. And then, I mean, they're not doing great anyway on the devices side. I mean, in terms of what was expected, they had to massively downgrade their expectations
at the start of the year.
Ago. So that business is, the investors aren't particularly happy with.
It's kind of peaked in terms of growth.
Kind of peaked a bit. And I mean, the smartphone market generally is in a bit of a slowdown phase, isn't it?
It is.
Because there's not that much that's getting added to phones that is making people go, it's worth upgrading, basically.
Yeah, and try, but it fails.
And also something to do with Chinese, there's a perception that Chinese consumers are going all patriotic and deciding not to buy iPhones because it's a nasty American company.
I don't think that's very plausible.
Made in China. I think it's the main thing is they are getting boring.
Yeah.
So not much.
But that certainly ties in with the massive Huawei boost to the phones business thing recently.
Yes, it could be. Well, I think one of the reasons...
Whether it's patriotism or just...
I hesitate to generalise about China, especially with a Chinese bloke sat right next to me.
Yeah.
But
I'm looking at you.
Yes, looking at me, just waiting for me to put my foot in it.
That's right.
But I don't find the patriotism angle very plausible, because I think a lot of the new Chinese middle class, they just love brands, they love Western brands. It's not a matter of
brands,
choosing
but
they're just
after the best products
right.
in the world.
Fair enough.
So
and
yeah.
regardless of their origin.
No, exactly.
But has the arrest of I can't remember
what's her name? Huawei CFO.
I'm probably going to pronounce this wrong as well, but Meng Wanzhou.
Oh yes, yeah.
Maybe that. I mean, it's almost like arresting Jeff Bezos in China, isn't it? And
right.
You know,
okay.
So
yeah. Maybe. Then maybe
there was a perception. I know some analysts were saying that
may
led
have
to some kind of
impact,
backlash,
but it will not just depress the Apple numbers like that.
It's a wider issue than that.
But Apple is also working on their own modem. I think you wrote about it.
They are. Mm. But you know, that's going to take a little while. And you know, back to my comment about Qualcomm. And I got no issue with Qualcomm. If it sounds like they deserve to win this, because it didn't sound like Apple had enough of a case against them. But because they're so dominant in terms of 5G modems, there's certain restrictions on how much they can charge, especially when you get into FRAN patents, which is an abbreviation for sort of fair and reasonable something.
Non-discriminatory.
Like that. Yeah. Non-discriminatory. There we go. Which basically means if you've got a patent that is standards essential, you can't overcharge for it, which is totally right. And I think that might have been what happened with them in the past as well. But just the actual modems themselves, so like the X whatever it is, 5000, I can't remember, is it 8000? Doesn't matter.
You're the modems, man.
Yeah, well, relatively. But, you know, if there's nothing else that comes even close, then they're in a sort of monopolistic
position.
How much
position. Of this stems from, not from Qualcomm's expertise, but from sourcing designs through ARM, basically, as opposed to using Intel sort of x86-based?
Right. Well, that's a sort of murky area.
Is that the real clash here, is ARM versus Intel rather than... You know,
I don't think so much in modems. It certainly wasn't application processors.
Right.
As I touched on at the start, there's no way x86-based chips were going to have the power efficiency of ARM-based chips. It's just it just seems to be a fact built into the underlying
We should qualify that, because Intel is not pulling out of 5G. It's pulling out of 5G 5G smartphone modems.
Right.
So they say they will focus on data centers or a connected PC.
They'll still have a big 5G.
They've got a whole IoT business group.
They will do 5G, but not for smartphones, because they can't make it efficient enough.
Yeah.
So there is that, but you know, there are plenty. That alone doesn't explain why Qualcomm's better than everyone else, because everyone except Intel uses ARM IP anyway.
Yeah,
which is what makes ARM such a remarkable company.
Well, I talked to somebody about who's involved in this off the record, and his blunt assessment was basically Qualcomm's just really, really good.
Yeah.
They just have incredibly good engineers, and no one's ever been able to...
Yeah, and spend a ton on R&D, and they've been doing it for 20, 30 years.
It was as basic as that, he said.
Hire the best engineers and the best lawyers. Yeah. That's their
focus,
the business model.
They've got to stay ahead at that game.
They've always been engineers and lawyers, as far as I know. Yeah. But they will... You know, if the 5G modem business remains uncompetitive for a while, as we've seen loads of times with other big tech giants, they're going to start to get regulatory hit, regardless of whether or not they're in a monopolistic position on merit, i.e. by competing rather than by dirty tricks. If you find yourself in a monopolistic position, you're going to get done by regulators sooner or later anyway, because they will quite rightly conclude that you're in a position to overcharge for your products because there isn't enough competition. Mm. Now... Obviously, if Apple does eventually make its own 5G modem and it's half decent, then that's all good. And Huawei has got its own that actually seems to be working, and I guess we'll see that in Huawei phones before the end of this year. Yeah. So we'll be able to actually check this stuff out.
Mm. The Mate X.
There we are. And maybe even Samsung. In fact, quick sideline before we move on, Pierre.
Yeah.
You were the one who expressed the deepest scepticism in the past about the new Foldy phone, the Samsung Fold. Is it just called Fold or...?
Flat or Galaxy Fold.
There we are. And now some went out to reviewers and they got busted. You didn't seem surprised, Pierre.
No, and it's not like I'm happy or haha, I told you. Because, I mean, some new stuff is always welcome.
Always welcome, but there it is.
Just this particular design, looking at it, gap, the angle.
When I was at Mobile World Congress, both of them were behind glass cases, but the Huawei Fold phone looks much, much better.
I thought when I was writing it up,
product. Yeah. But I bet Huawei would have seen what happened to Samsung.
Yeah.
They're going to get a bit cold feet, maybe.
So just as a quick recap, because I wrote that up earlier on this week, Samsung's basically had to delay the launch of the Fold because they kept getting busted.
I wouldn't be surprised if it doesn't come out in this form.
Some analysts were saying that it was more a concept than the finished product.
Definitely planning to launch it. When they got the reviewers.
That's right.
That felt like a public beta. Which is a very silly thing to do. Mm. Do public betas with software, maybe, but not with hardware.
No.
With employees, I don't know.
Yeah.
Surely all the issues would have come up.
Give it to some employee's kid to chew on and kick around the house.
I mean, like a hire.
See if it withstands that. Give it to my dog, man.
The iPhone before it came out. Employees actually tried it, and one guy lost it on a plane one day.
Yeah.
And he had the whole staff looking for it.
And there was a big leak once about an iPhone prototype that guy left in a bar.
And then
Gizmodo or something got hold of it. Yeah, that was funny. Okay, Ian. So, you've been a real team player and come in today, even though you're on holiday, aren't you?
Yeah.
So nice one, mate.
An exciting holiday.
You should be rewarded with alcohol after this.
That's good.
But
the incentive.
When you weren't on holiday last week, you still went to France, which sounds a bit like a holiday to me, if I'm honest, mate. But why don't you tell
it
us?
It was a holiday.
Why don't you tell us what if any work you did there?
It was Orange does these trips every now and again for journalists to go over to Paris and He's offered a presentation by Stéphane Richard, the CEO, on some issue or another, and they have a lot of customers there at these events and other executives, and it was basically another one of those, but very much focused on the enterprise side of things.
Yeah.
And 5G opportunities around that. So they've announced some trials that they're doing with fairly big French corporations, the likes of Renault and SNCF, which is the kind of French rail authority, and a few others. But the thing that I found interesting was actually having those customers there on stage saying, expressing interest in 5G and talking about why they need 5G and what it could do for them, which
is an actual sort of companies.
This is the most exciting thing about 5G potentially, is the enterprise.
I know, we talk about the phones and all that sort of thing, but we've always known
it's just faster connections. I mean, maybe it'll allow you to do, you know, augmented reality gaming
eventually
and stuff like that, that you need that low latency. Maybe there is some kind of consumer new,
but for the next few years.
But the enterprise opportunities, like the one that everybody keeps talking about, as a kind of new revenues that they haven't been able to kind of get through 4G technology. But it's always come from the operator. So they actually had very, very senior people from Renault, I think the head of strategy, and like the guy who's, I don't know what his job title was, but very, very high up on SNCF as well.
Okay.
And also representative of a group called France Industry, which I think is like a sort of, what would the equivalent here would be, Confederation of British Industry,
okay.
I think. It's
yeah,
a sort of,
that's,
you know,
what I think.
Business kind of lobby group, coming out with like quite specific details of how it could help them. So
right.
SNCF is basically saying they think that using 5G technology would allow them to increase the number of trains they run on tracks by about 40%.
Really?
Yeah. And the reason is because,
in terms of actually managing the trains,
yeah,
optimally.
So basically you can, what the guy was saying is you can run trains closer together,
right,
safely, and you can use the connectivity and the low latency.
Is that like sort of vehicle to vehicle?
It's kind of vehicle
sort of
to vehicle thing.
Right.
Whereas at the moment it has to be done by person, and it's just, you can't, so you have to keep the trains quite a long way apart. But he was saying that with the sophistication that 5G brings, they can run trains more
because,
closely together.
You know, my understanding of one of the advantages of vehicle to vehicle is because these two vehicles are constantly communicating wirelessly with each other, as soon as one slams on the brakes, the other one knows about it straight away.
Yeah.
So there's no lag, there's no delay in responding, that sort of thing.
And Renault, which this is also interesting, given there's this big dispute going on at the moment in the European industry about which technology gets used in cars, there's like a push by parts of this sort of European bureaucracy to back a Wi-Fi type standard over 5G. And I was under the impression that Renault was part of that kind of Wi-Fi camp, but the guy from Renault, who was head of strategy, basically stood up and said, we need 5G in vehicles in future. And it's not because you need 5G to have an autonomous vehicle, it's the communications between that vehicle and all sorts of other things, like traffic lights, for instance, or other bits of street furniture that might be sending critical information to you. And that, he said, that's why we need 5G technology in the future in cars. So it was kind of nice to go to something and hear a message come from the companies that are expected to use 5G rather than
albeit they wouldn't have been put on stage by Orange if they'd have gone, to be honest, 5G's rubbish and we can't be bothered with it.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, they wouldn't lie either.
And then the other interesting thing, and this came after some reports in the French press about how they're going to, because they still haven't had their 5G spectrum auction. And there's been some speculation about countries sort of going down this German route, where what they've done quite controversially is to kind of not release a bit of the mid-band spectrum to kind of hold that back. And what they want to do in future is sell it to industrial groups. Mm. So they've got German car makers expressing an interest in acquiring spectrum and like building their own kind of local factory networks.
That's interesting, isn't it?
And it's really wound the telcos up, obviously, because it means they have less spectrum.
Is that finished, by the way, that auction?
It's still going on. I
Blimey.
Checked this morning, just as it was coming in.
What's it
slowed down the in terms of the value of the spectrum, it's not going up as dramatically as it used to be.
It's
coming to an end. It's about 5.4 billion.
Oh, so about what everyone expected.
Well, it's a bit above.
So we're not quite
it's a little bit above what everyone was expecting, but not dramatically.
But it was over 5 that was expected.
It was over. I think people were saying 3 to 5.
Oh, okay, right.
So
it's a bit
above,
just above the top
expectations,
end.
But it's.
Oh, right.
I mean, people like Timotej Turkus, who's the CEO of Deutsche Telekom, were complaining that this cutting out this sort of 100 megahertz and not including it in that auction has kind of pushed prices up to some extent because it's limited the supply of spectrum.
Quite. But I think he had a bit of a rant.
The other reason they wound up about it, obviously, is that if German car makers and other groups start building out their own private 5G networks, then that's a big opportunity that the telcos have lost. And they're not going to. It seems they're not going to do that in France. What they're going to do is standard approach, basically, just to have an auction that the telcos bid for. But then there's going to be quite strict obligations on the telcos to meet industrial requirements. And that kind of tied in with the whole theme of this conference, where you had people like SNCF and Renault really kind of putting pressure on Stefan Richard on stage to get to get cracking with 5G. It was like, we need coverage. We need this to be rolled out. Otherwise, we can't. Okay.
So it's not like they gave him an easy ride.
No, and there was they were sort of painting it as, unless this happens, then France is going to lose out economically in the long run to places like China, because they're going to take advantage of 5G technology to boost their industries. And we're not going to have that those productivity gains. So there's like real sort of pressure on, or not just Orange, but other telcos to actually sort of get moving with this. So it's quite an interesting update, I thought.
Yeah, I just read a few days ago someone from an EU-backed organization called 5G Infrastructures Association.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
The guy was saying that the 5G networks nowadays being launched in South Korea and North America, they're not real 5G.
Yep.
So what we need is what as you said, so the real stuff should be able to serve the industries, not just faster internet access. So his point is Europe may not be the fastest to launch 5G, but we could be the best.
Yeah,
maybe.
Something
like that. Maybe it gets the industrial.
Yeah, that's the Apple approach, isn't it? They'll be first, but be the best.
Yeah, Apple has never been the first with anything. I mean, the first iPhone was not even 3G.
And it wasn't the first smartphone, as you know. Nokia
was exactly.
Doing loads of, and that message was a lot better than anything Nokia was doing. Yeah.
I think that message has been coming from some other people as well, some analysts saying that because the use cases haven't really crystallised yet, maybe not being first is a bit of an advantage, because it gives industries chance to sort of figure out what they're going to do with this, and you know, when they eventually do introduce it, maybe they've been in a bit better position. Yeah. So,
talking about, we'll finish off here before Pierre starts giving me looks.
Talking
about use cases, a headline. So I thought I'd have a look at light reading, given that you haven't been working this week. Yeah. Although, by the way, Ian, what it says about you that while you're on holiday in the morning, you check on the status of the German 5G auction.
Yes, yeah, not an interesting holiday, as I say.
But anyway, I'm pleased you did, because it added some value to our little pod. But so I thought I'd check and see what's been going on light reading, given you haven't been actively contributing to it this week. And Mike, our colleague Mike, wrote this one, which is a bit of a duh headline. This isn't a dig at Mike. This is a dig at the quote he used. Verizon, millimeter wave is not coverage spectrum for 5G. Now, bit of a sort of inside baseball thing. But of course, the whole point of millimeter wave is it's pure capacity. It's absolutely rubbish for coverage, because its range and its propagation characteristics are so relatively poor.
You can't even get coverage past your arm if it's in the way, apparently.
Right.
In some cases. Well, you've got to work on the. This is why you need things like beamforming.
Yeah,
isn't it?
That's what you need
to go around.
You need some bloke on top of a building with a sniper rifle pointing mobile phone signals at your phone. But I just thought that was funny. It wouldn't be a duh thing unless you wrote about the telecoms industry as we do. But it's so clearly not a coverage spectrum, nor ever was, that it's quite funny. And it's actually Vestberg, the guy who used to be in charge of Ericsson, who said it, because he's now the Verizon CEO. So, yeah, Mike says, Verizon CEO fought back against concerns about the operator's 5G build-out. And one of his retorts was that it's not a coverage spectrum, but I don't see what that's got to do with anything.
I find it interesting that Ericsson makes such a big fuss about spectrum in Europe and how it's not being released quickly enough.
Right.
And then in the US, where they basically don't have any mid-band spectrum because it's all sort of snarled up, it's all used by other, I think, satellite.
Military.
But they don't say anything there, because I guess they're still getting business anyway on millimeter wave side, and there's no Huawei in that market, so they don't really have anything to worry about. But
well, that's in their quarterlies for a week or two ago. Yeah, North America's a serious, pretty much all their growth
is coming from,
is from the US.
Yeah.
Well, just related to just very minor sort of anecdotes, related to 5G in the US. You remember that AT&T 5GE?
Oh yes,
And Sprint, and they settled. They settled.
Cough, not 4G at all.
That's right.
Cough.
Yeah. So then they settled as well. So yeah.
What happened
there? 5GE will
basically
stay.
They're keeping it.
They're keeping that expression.
Yeah. So it's Sprint, and it looks like Sprint's just lost that basically. Presumably that whoever the adjudicator went, they can call it what they want.
Yeah.
I still think it's a, well, I don't know, have any evidence. My gut feel is it's still a negative for AT&T because they just look like idiots when they did it.
Well, it makes it harder to brand stuff that comes out that really is 5G then, as well.
Yeah.
It's like you've already shot your bolt. So
well, quite. Yeah, and T-Mobile US did it a decade ago with
Well, that's why it's a bit ridiculous when they try and sort of have a go at
it. So they're all opportunists at the end
themselves.
Of the day. Cool. All right. I think we've done about an hour. So I will wrap it up there. Thanks a lot, Super Subway.
Thank you.
And thanks a lot for coming in your day off. I'll tell you, without you two, it'd just be me here going on about modems for an hour. So thanks a lot.
That'll be lots of fun.
Cheers. And thanks a lot for listening.
Thank
Make sure you join us for the next one.
Thank you.